Welcome to Beyond Bitcoin, a podcast about all things digital assets, the global communities they are creating, the generations that are using and investing in them, and the challenges faced by the nations that are seeking to regulate them. The content of this program is not to be taken as investment advice. The opinions expressed in the program by the host and the guests are their personal opinions only. Remember, feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management, and my co-host is Nitin Gower, Managing Director of State Street Digital Assets. Good morning and welcome along to Beyond Bitcoin. Another episode, a fascinating one today, because we're looking towards ways of solving the Bitcoin handling, solving custodianship, and making it easier for maybe less people to use BTC ETFs. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management, and I'm here today, of course, as normal, with my friend, colleague, and CTO of Portal Asset Management, Nitin Gower. Hello, Nitin.
Hey, Derek. First of all, glad to be here. This time also still in Asia, but from a different country. I'm in Hong Kong at the moment. Did have a few meetings with some technical developers. So this time I'm actually getting my technical acumen sharpened by being here. But looking forward to today's conversation, which to me is very special because it's a really unique problem that our guest is going to talk about. So over to you.
Indeed. Well, how about introducing Aki and what exactly, you know, we can do in that particular space, what you're doing, which is extraordinary, and how you guys met, and over to you. Let's start that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thanks. So again, for audience, so meet Aki. Aki, thank you for being here on Beyond Bitcoin. And this is all about Bitcoin. So it's going to be not just Beyond Bitcoin, but all about Bitcoin today. But when Aki reached out to me and I was still at State Street, we were trying to figure out the liquidity challenges and removing the counterparty risk. So, for example, the notion of the fact that you have the two of the largest structural assets, the Bitcoin and Ether, and they have their liquidity trapped in those ecosystems. How do we move the liquidity across these larger ecosystems and eventually across many other ecosystems that are emerging at a smart contract ecosystem level? And when Aki mentioned his project, which is the discrete lock contract, the DLC link, I was intrigued because one, there's a lot of things happening in Bitcoin ecosystem, especially around bringing smart contract, Turing complete smart contract with BitVM in Bitcoin ecosystem. At the same time, what Aki had the vision, and I'll let him go into much detail of his journey, is around bridging the liquidity between those two large ecosystems by using something interesting and reducing some of the counterparty risks that come with the things like wrapped BDC, which is a mechanism to wrap a Bitcoin ecosystem and move that liquidity to Ethereum, still has custody risks, still has counterparty risks, and so on and so forth. So without further ado, Aki, welcome. Tell us a bit more about yourself, your journey, and how do you get to this point? Like, what made you think, I need to solve this problem?
Sure. And I'll keep it short so we can keep the conversation going. So I've been a developer since I was 10. I was a VC 13 years ago in Boston at OpenView Venture Partners. I know I'm like older than I look, but I was looking at big data, data management, AI. Ended up actually starting, I learned about Bitcoin in 2011, but unfortunately did not get in then full time. But I started an AI company, built that for 8 years. And coming out of that, I wanted to build a second product, one that benefits society. And I got involved with the people who built the Chivo wallet. I saw that Chivo was being used by over 250,000 people daily. And I thought, wow, Bitcoin has crossed the chasm. You know, in software and entrepreneurship, this is a term where it's something that everybody can understand and get behind. And it's something that the network effects are so massive that everybody in the world or almost everybody will have some experience with it over many years. So let's build on Bitcoin. But 3 years ago, you know, how do you actually do that? Well, there were some kind of side projects like Stacks and RSK. They have various forms of bridging. But to me, bridging never seemed like it made any sense because you would take the most decentralized asset. The point of Bitcoin when you get it or when you mine it is that it's the most decentralized asset. And so you take this decentralized asset and you bridge it using some sort of chain or something that has, by definition, far fewer validators, far lower security than your Bitcoin. Or even worse, maybe you send it to one custodian, like for WBTC, you send it to BitGo. And it just seemed like bridges nor custodians would not actually scale Bitcoin to a meaningful, it's just too big. I mean, Bitcoin is just too big to be used in this way. And then meanwhile, we saw, of course, Ethereum, especially DeFi flourishing, all these cool things like Aave. And we realized, wait a moment, if we could just get somehow Bitcoin liquidity over to DeFi systems, wouldn't that be amazing? Because right now, all of Bitcoin finance, lending and everything, investment is CeFi. And long story short, we found this DLC, discrete log contract invention, which was actually created by the creator of the Lightning Network 6 years ago, Taj, an MIT researcher. And we realized this could be a way to have trustless wrapping of Bitcoin to Ethereum. So we started 3 years ago, started DLC Link. And in two weeks from today, actually, we are launching DLC BTC on Arbitrum. It's the first world's first self-wrapped Bitcoin. So it's actually minted out of self-custody. So it's a safer wrapped Bitcoin.
Yeah. So let me dig a little bit deeper, right?
So DLC, first of all, stands for discrete log contracts. These were invented at MIT 6 years ago by the creator of the Lightning Network. I found out about this 3 years ago when I was researching ways to scale Bitcoin. Basically, Bitcoin is, of course, the largest pool of liquidity, but how are we going to scale it into finance, lending, borrowing, options, all of that? And there are basically two main ways. One is you can take the world's most decentralized asset and send it to a single custodian. That is what happens with WBTC, where you send the Bitcoin to BitGo, they hold it. If something goes wrong, the Bitcoin is gone. The other mode is to bridge it. So you take the most decentralized asset and you send it to something that by definition has a far lower security model. Maybe it's custodied by 8 nodes or 40 nodes or 100 nodes, but you know it's much smaller. And we realized none of these are going to work because the whole point, the best outcome is to use Bitcoin and Ethereum. Ethereum has countless validators, Bitcoin has countless miners. And basically anything that adds another layer in there is going to cause a problem or going to cause a security flaw. So what we're doing is we're implementing this invention, of this the Lightning Network creator DLCs to enable trustless wrapping of Bitcoin to Ethereum.
Fantastic. So let me probe a bit more into this because this is super interesting, Aki, because the discrete log contract, from my understanding, it's a form of a Bitcoin transaction that uses Oracle to execute a smart contract. And essentially, it allows for parties to place bets using the Bitcoin blockchain, which is the actual sort of main net. And in order to construct the discrete log contract, something like what we have seen with HTLCs or hash time-like contracts, log contracts, the two parties log fund using a multi-sig address. So for example, if I have a Bitcoin and I would like to move the Bitcoin from my ecosystem, then it's me and you who agree upon it. We have a multi-sig mechanism, which removes the counterparty risk from a custody perspective and allows me to be able to provide the mobility of that and engage in financial primitives like borrow, lend, collateralize. Is that how I should view this?
That is the original way that DLCs were written and proposed. And it often happens with academia is there's a kind of an example given, and some people take that example literally. But really, so the basic idea is you have Alice, Bob, and the Oracle. Now, the first question is, okay, who's the Oracle? Like, how do you know? How can you have an Oracle? And a lot of teams actually went and tried to build like Bitcoin oracles, but where does the data come from? So we took a different approach. We're thinking, okay, if we're bridging Bitcoin to Ethereum, the best Oracle is Ethereum chain, Ethereum validators themselves, because the user has chosen to trust Ethereum validators in the sense that they want to bridge to ETH. So, explicitly, they have chosen to trust ETH. So if we make ETH the oracle, and maybe it's not a price feed oracle, maybe it's not a sports bet, some of these examples of, DLCs that have been bandied around. But if we just have, the Ethereum on-chain signals direct the movement of Bitcoin, that's going to remove like one piece of it. And that's what we went to implement. That was one of our kind of big aha moments. And the other big aha moment we had for wrapping Bitcoin is, typically DLCs have two or more outcomes. Alice and Bob put in some Bitcoin and either Alice or Bob gets it. But who the heck is Bob? Like if I'm trying to wrap Bitcoin, I'm Alice. Okay, so who is Bob? And can you have a Bob that's not going to rug the whole protocol? In our estimation, no, you cannot have a Bob because any Bob would be somehow incented to rug or steal the Bitcoin or somehow hack the system. So in our system, we only have Alice. So Alice locks with Alice where basically, and the way DLCBTC works is Alice puts a Bitcoin to put into a multisig that can only pay out to her. Once that multisig is funded, there's a relay that sends, that are these node operators called the testers that are running Bitcoin and Ethereum nodes. They see that the UTXO is funded on Bitcoin. They send a signal to ETH, mint the DLCBTC. Boom, it's on chain on ETH. You use it for DeFi. When you're done, you burn it. That sends the signal back, and ETH is being the oracle, and that unlocks the DLC, sends the Bitcoin back to Alice. So that was the only kind of scalable way we saw that this could be done.
And from a point of view of a standard user, this sounds quite brilliant in the fact that if you're in control of your Bitcoin and your Bitcoin is in a DLC system and it goes out, it's getting generated a return, it can't go anywhere but back to you, which means that it can't be hacked, stolen or anything, because if it's hacked, stolen or anything, it's of no use to them because it has to be going back to you. I really like that. That's in its own way is its custody. And then in the second way, of course, not only are you getting custody, but you're getting a return by putting it into the DeFi network, potentially, if that's what you intend to do. You put in the DeFi network and you're getting a return on your Bitcoin. Quite fascinating. Now, what I don't understand is how easy is it to do? in case the people out there aren't knitting.
Yes, of course. So one thing about us, we are similar to DLC, to WBTC, in the way that we work with institutions. Think of us like a USDC. We're a Silicon Valley bank, Wells Fargo, other banks put up dollars to mint USDC, and retail like you and me use the USDC. And if we want to redeem it for dollars, we have to go back to SVB. So us as the DLC BTC kind of software company maintaining this network, we sell to these institutions, the Silicon Valley banks, but in a Bitcoin sense, they are Amber Group, FalconX, Galaxy. These are called DLC BTC merchants. So they put up Bitcoin locked with themselves. And by the way, if you're representing an institution listening to this, obviously we'd love to talk to you because you can be a merchant and be part of this foundation. But basically, the institutions are self-wrapping to mint. Retail holds the DLCBTC. They can buy it at exchanges. They can swap for it in pools, etc. But retail has the peace of mind that the Bitcoin is not held at any one given place. It's diversified among a number of merchants. And they can see who the merchants are. The merchants each have Bitcoin locked on chain. It cannot be spoofed. It cannot be tricked. It cannot be stolen. So it's just a much safer asset for retail to hold.
Fascinating.
So one thing which we discussed too, right? So great point, Aki. We discussed collateral management. So one thing I think your protocol does is it allows you to be able to move liquidity seamlessly without going through these two additional steps, which is what Wrapped BTC does. And because you have those two additional steps, you have counterparty risks, whether it's technology risks that custodians bring about, or like we've seen with the likes of Wormhole, you have some level of hacks or vulnerabilities in the system that allows you to be able to steal funds. So you're sort of removing those elements and giving control to two direct parties, allowing you to be able to provide signaling mechanism at a protocol level to be able to lock and release as and when the financial sort of events happen. But at the same time, I think what you're doing is you're trying to move seamless liquidity between literally $1 trillion asset class to a little over $500 billion asset class, which form the lion's share of the entire crypto ecosystem seamlessly. So if I have to be able to move liquidity, which is what I've been lately working on, things like Intent Protocol, to figure out as to which is the biggest bang for my buck, figuring out if you have DEXs and automated market makers and lending pools, which is the best yield I can get. And I can take my BTC liquidity, move that liquidity into these different ecosystem to extract the most amount of value. So you're solving for that. Second thing I think we discussed also was collateral management. So I think the use cases are enormous in terms of its magnitude, in terms of its volume. I'd love to sort of, take a peek into your brain to see, as you're looking at this business modeling and business analysis, Aki, in solving for whether it's a VC or whether it's going after institutions that me and you discussed, what is your thinking? What is your selling point to them? To take all these different use cases, say, one, you're doing all these things and you have to, like, this is DLC.link, we're going to make money. What is your business model there?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of things there. So the typical use case for DLC BTC, very similar to WBTC, Bitcoin makes great collateral. In fact, it's the largest pool of underutilized collateral in the world.
True.
Over
true.
$1 trillion of underutilized collateral, true. Arguably. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, let that sink in. So people who are holding Bitcoin, I mean, of course, in the beginning, you see tremendous price appreciation. Maybe they're fine holding it in cold storage. Maybe miners are fine putting it aside. But now the halving's coming up. You know, people are realizing we're holding this for generations. Wouldn't it be great to get some compound interest that over the years will have a massive effect? Of course, we all know how that works out. And so what are the typical things that somebody could do with an asset? You could use it, you know, you could borrow against it and invest the proceeds. You could do options on it. You know, you could do covered calls. I mean, I'm not much of an options trader, but that's one that's, you know, very easy to do and usually performs well depending on the market, or if you anticipate a different market, buy different options. These are things that have existed in finance for a long time. And so the use cases we're enabling are things that are actually really simple. I would say our unique selling point is this is so dead simple. There's no, you know, in DeFi, we're used to all sorts of quirks and technologies and like this one does this specific thing. And like, how do you evaluate the risk of that? I don't know, but we're just trustlessly wrapping Bitcoin to ETH and then you do options. Almost boring, but it's stuff that finance people know how to assess that.
Yeah, look, it's actually quite brilliant because, you know, the Bitcoin clearly is not a currency. It's not fast enough. It's not effective enough to be a currency. So it's become a store of wealth, as we all know. It's become this digital gold concept that we all know. But to date, it's been a store of wealth without any return. People have just been logging it away and saying, well, I'm just going to wait for capital gain. But as you say, if they want to keep Bitcoin for long periods of time, why wouldn't you utilize it in the decentralized finance environment? One would think you'd want to do that with responsibility and be careful with how you're going to utilize that. But that's your choice. But if you can utilize it in a DeFi environment, you're starting to get a consistent yield on your holding of Bitcoin. It is really as fundamental, if I may say, as the surprise that we see with fiat currency tokens, you know. And the fact that you buy US dollar stable coins and somebody else gets the interest. What a great business model that is. And so you know, it is you know, it's as fundamental as that. If you can actually utilize this and get your BTC to get a return, that's fantastic. Now, Aki, what sort of return options are there out there? Can it be used like any other Ethereum token, so to speak, and utilized right throughout decentralized finance, or do products have to be built for it?
No, I think the best part of it is DLC BTC is an ERC-20, just like USDC. It can go into anything. You know, it's taking dollars and making them digitally available, like perfect business model. So DLC BTC, you can put it into anything. All you have to do is list it as collateral. It's very straightforward. You can't do anything unusual with it. There's like all this Bitcoin staking. It is physically impossible to stake Bitcoin. So anytime you hear Bitcoin staking, there's like some other technology going on. And it's kind of trying to simplify a complex truth down for easy consumption, which is kind of dangerous. So yeah, DLC BTC doesn't do anything by itself. But if you use it in an investment strategy, and there are numerous ways to do that with or without leverage, then you know, you can just earn on it. And our customers are seeing, you know, have seen 10 to 30% APY just doing covered calls on DLC BTC. I mean, that's already pretty good.
Yeah. Wow. So one thing is to Derek's point and to your point, Aki, it's a highly the entire crypto industry is over collateralized lending. Bitcoin itself, or all the ETF buzz that we've seen the last few months and the massive amount of inflows that we've seen, Bitcoin still remains locked in a vault somewhere. It's not being utilized, and the traditional finance never works that way. There's always sec lending happening. There's also all kinds of securities that make up an ETF is borrowed and lent to provide that collateral that the industry seeks and needs. So I think this really solves that issue. But one question that I had was on BitVM, right? Which is basically the fact that today your DLC works using an Oracle signature for a certain message for private keys relies upon that smart contract, which is relying on that validation ecosystem of Ethereum. But when you have BitVM evolve, which I'm expecting a year or 2 years at the pace at which the industry is heading, how does that affect your business in the sense that suddenly now you have smart contract capabilities, and I'm assuming that the proliferation of all these, you know, it's replicating all the Ethereum successes that we've seen in those construct into Bitcoin ecosystem. Does that affect your business, or does it make it more prolific?
It doesn't affect us in the sense that we don't expect to see them in deals too often. Think of us as we retrofit existing chains to support native Bitcoin in kind of an easy way. So we're talking about Ethereum, Solana, you know, Cosmos chains that don't natively have Bitcoin. Some of them do, most of them don't. You know, wherever there's DeFi activity, trading activity, we want to insert Bitcoin liquidity there. So we're like a Bitcoin liquidity provision protocol into existing chains. BitVM, BitLayer actually had a big announcement last week. We're really excited to see all the developments of building on Bitcoin, BitVM, you know, the idea of Bitcoin L1 doing fraud proofs and the ability to actually one day have actual roll-ups on Bitcoin seems really cool. Yeah. For the companies that want to use that, they are going to use that, and that's great. Our target market are traders and financial institutions who have already built out on EVM. They have massive infrastructure. They made significant investments, and these things are not so easy to migrate. So they want to keep doing that. And EVM just has a big head start. So you know, yeah. if we just migrate Bitcoin to EVM, that's already a big win for us.
Got it. No, that's brilliant. I have one, another follow-up question. Right, we were at the ETH Denver. A lot of conversation on LRT, which is liquid restaking tokens. EigenLayer, of course, created a massive buzz, and many of us who are looking into both the techno and economics of the ecosystem is that with the 4844 and the Denken upgrade, there has been a massive amount of cost focus to how do you reduce the cost of transaction. And so the question then becomes is that if these transactions are going to be super, super cheap, so things like EigenLayer, and you mentioned staking and restaking, which is not a concept that Bitcoin is familiar with because it's running on proof of work. So when you're looking at moving this liquidity, which will then be utilized to secure a layer two or even layer three, like an LRT sort of function, I just want to get your thinking around that, because Vitalik himself has written that, hey, by having something like EigenLayer, you're stressing the underlying core validation sort of network. And I'm looking at the economics of it, but I'm also looking at the technology of it, that it, are we building a house of cards at some level? So I just want to, I know it's a little bit esoteric because these are very nuanced constructs of LRT, of the liquid restaking tokens, and moving liquidity and creating another token which can be then restaked. It's a little, you know, Russian doll like conversation, but love to see if you've spent some time thinking about that.
Yeah, look, there's always risks, especially when things layer on top of other things and everything's so new and there's some gotchas. And by the way, there's, you know, organizations constantly trying to hack every layer of the stack. That's always the case. But I think the magic of DeFi comes in its composability. I mean, like, you know, take a step back. Why are we even talking about DeFi? It's because kind of the like, you know, little dirty secret of Bitcoin is it's almost all CeFi, and the CeFi is not insured, you know, it's not regulated, you have no recourse. If it blows up, your money is gone, basically. Yeah. Your Bitcoin is gone. And so at least DeFi is transparent and it's programmable. I mean, it's really, really programmable. And there are pros and cons to that. And there's, you know, always people innovating and building things. But the great thing is we play a very simple role in this. We get the Bitcoin to DLC BTC, you take that ERC-20, you can do whatever you want with it, program it in any way. And so, yeah, I think in the future, could we have a product where you basically vault the DLC BTC and it uses some strategy to earn a yield? Yep. That is something that we could potentially do. We haven't committed to that product, but that is something we look at on a weekly basis, if not daily. But right now, actually, we're even shortcutting that and just plugging into some popular stable coins that already do that. So shortly after launch, we're going to plug into one called Lambda BTC USD, which takes TBTC and DLC BTC as collateral some point next month. then also Curve USD and other stablecoins. Yeah. So if we can just provide the collateral to plug into these stablecoins, that's great. If someone can build liquid staking tokens off of DLC BTC using some logic, that's fantastic. You know, it is composable and it's out there for developers to innovate with.
Right. And so,
fantastic.
You know, just an observation, and that is that it's that the world is used to, for the last few thousand years, buying gold. I always argue, digging it out of the ground. And remember, I'm based in Perth in Western Australia, a state four times bigger than Texas, with 2 and a bit million people in it, and we dig up gold here. That's our job description, right? And that and iron ore. And so when we dig this gold up, 70% of it is just put back in the ground in the form of putting into a vault. And in fact, you don't earn money from it. It costs you money because you've got to pay rent to keep the gold there, if you want the physicals. And of course, the vast majority is in traded digitally along the way. So this is an example, I think, where people that have invested in Bitcoin have the mindset that, in fact, well, that's what gold is. You know, you buy it, does nothing. You just put it aside and hope for capital gain. And that's where you get your... What you're talking about here is actually turning around and making it a yield-earning asset. It's very powerful. So just as an observation as to people's acceptance level of where BTC is, and I think you can change that dynamics, number one. And then a question, finally, as a wrap-up question, and that is, what does this look like to, let's say, a retailish investor? Don't have to be retail, but somebody's going to buy and hold their Bitcoin. How do they go through this process? Where might they go? How will it look? How difficult is the process to do it? And then where might they put their DLC BTC token? Well, that, of course, last part is their decision. But the first part, what does it look like and how does it work?
Yeah, there's two answers to that, depending on who you are and how much, you know, Bitcoin we're talking about. We have this DLC BTC merchants program. These are large institutions, you know, to back it. We do intend to decentralize the merchants program as much as is optimal. I won't say as much as possible, but as much as optimal. And there's we're actually doing some scenario modeling with some large risk management firms around this. But there's an argument to be made that the more diverse the merchant set or the larger the merchant set, that's better, because if one merchant fails, it's less likely to affect the entire system. And this is something maybe uniquely possible with Bitcoin that would be difficult to do with, you know, USD, because you can actually, we can really broaden that and make it a technology-driven onboarding process and so on. So if we are to diversify, then if you are, you know, holding, if you're a qualified or accredited investor or a large Bitcoin holder, you could potentially become a merchant and actually, you know, provide liquidity into the system. I can't promise it yet. Right now, our minimum is around 25 BTC. But as we decentralize and we evolve, that is one possible scenario. But in the, you know, until then, retail can engage at, you know, at DEXs or at SEXs, eventually centralized exchanges. So for example, next month we're launching a WBTC DLC BTC curve pool. You can swap your WBTC for DLC BTC there, put it into various protocols. We're going to launch a dashboard that shows you kind of a catalog, shows you where you can use it. But eventually then over Q2 and Q3, we will launch on all the, you know, your large centralized exchanges that you know and love, like Coinbase, OKX, etc. So you will be able to, just like you can swap your Bitcoin for WBTC today to use in DeFi, you'll be able to swap it for DLC BTC as a safer asset. And that's already a step forward in the security of the kind of overall system.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. And again, Aki, tell the audience, how can they get in touch with you? Tell the audience in terms of, you'll be at Token 2049. We'll certainly meet up in 2049. You're, of course, ingrained in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So you'll be at Bitcoin Hong Kong, Bitcoin Nashville. But tell us a bit more how we can get in touch with you, how can we learn more about your project as a wrap-up.
Yeah, on Twitter, we're DLC_link, website DLC.link. There's a lot of good content on our blog. I highly encourage people to read it. We will be at Token. Our team will be there. We don't have a booth, but we will have a booth at Bitcoin Hong Kong and Bitcoin Nashville. So if you're at either one, stop by our booth. Otherwise, we also have a Discord community and a Telegram community, which you can access from the bottom of our website. So anyone listening to this, whether you're retail, institutional, or not sure, just join one of those channels and follow along.
Terrific. All right. Well, thank you so much for that. It's been a really fascinating technical introduction. Thank you so much, Nitin, for the introduction to Aki. It was just a really interesting example of the fact that this community is constantly reinventing its opportunities, even off existing technologies that have been around a long time, like BTC, and reinventing BTC to look have it more of a financial instrument. Impressive. Thanks very much for your time. I hope that the audience reaches out or meets you at one of those conferences, and we look forward to seeing you at Token 2049 in Dubai in a few weeks' time. Bye for now.
See you there.
See you soon, Aki. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed our weekly conversation. If you have any questions, comments, or suggested topics, please contact Nitin Gaur or myself on the emails displayed here or via our LinkedIn profiles. Feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. Stay well, inquisitive, and engaged. See you next week.